holidays, and welcome to your 2016-2017 birthday reading. My name is Eric Francis. I'm an astrologer. I love doing this stuff, and I've got some exciting news for you this year. In what may be one of the great watershed moments of your life, there is deep, beautiful stuff moving, and there is what would appear to be, by all indications, a kind of personal renaissance that you are getting to experience. A renaissance is a rebirth. This is a beautiful thing. And this would count for you whether you're one of my younger clients or one of my older clients. If you're one of my younger clients, the idea is to make the best decisions, to allow yourself to have a life that develops, allowing yourself to be the person who you really are. The message of the astrology over and over again is be who you actually are. If you are one of my older listeners experiencing this kind of personal renaissance, I would say that in many respects, this is even more meaningful, more important, in that it will guide you into using your remaining precious time on Earth in more constructive and creative ways for you. So let's consider first some of the main events of your birthday season. One of the things that is happening is that Mars will be retrograde. Mars retrograde is meaningful for you because it is the planet that is closely associated with your sign. In the language of classical astrology, Mars is the ruler of Aries. So I still use that word, but I don't mean it in the sense that it kind of rules you like Hitler. I mean that Mars is the ruling planet in that it is strongly associated with Aries. It is a delegate or representative of Aries wherever else it appears in the chart. Find out where your Mars is. By the way, if you are curious about astrology and you like the stuff and you find it to be interesting, figure out where your Mars is in your chart. It can be in any of the 12 signs, and your Mars placement will tell you a lot about yourself. The current Mars placement in the sky under which we are all living right now is in Sagittarius. As I speak today, on the fourth day of April 2016, my godmother Aunt Josie's birthday. By the way, happy birthday, Aunt Josie. She would have been 114 years old today. Incredible. She was born 1904 and was quite the Aries in that she was very much her own person. This is Aunt Josie. No matter how old-fashioned she was, she never once submitted to the idea that she was not her own person, despite every cultural pressure that would have had her doing precisely that. And that, I would say, is the number one takeaway from the biography of Aunt Josie that I would pass along to you on this, the anniversary of her birth in Sicily. And the nature of this renaissance, you might say, is the come-as-you-are renaissance, the be-yourself at all costs, borrowing from Bob Dylan, if you try to be anyone but yourself, you will fail. We could flip that and say, if you really do your best to be yourself and to present yourself authentically, and by authentically, I mean it. I don't mean looking good. I don't mean looking like you're authentic. I don't mean looking like you have integrity, which means integration of your inner reality. I mean taking the chance of doing the real thing, of being the actual person you actually, in fact, are to everyone. And this involves a discovery process. So the thing to remember is there is, on the one hand, a kind of a summoning to and an alert that the only approach to take is the approach of being real. But there is concurrent with that a reminder that in several very important ways, you are in a process of discovering who you are. You are in a process of seeking who you are, and you are in a process of becoming that in some ways is like a fire that is burning out of control. And yet at the same time, these developments that you're experiencing now, this personal renaissance, this very exciting moment of rethinking and designing who you are as a life of its own, and that life has been around for a long time. you're likely to have felt the first real rumblings of this awakening process at sometime in 2010, and then it really took hold in the spring of 2011 when Uranus entered Aries to stay. And so in the background of the astrology that you are living through is this thing that only happens once in your lifetime, unless you live past the age of 84, and then it's unlikely to happen twice, because you'd have to live 84 more years from today for it to happen again. And who knows, there will be some of us who do live to extraordinarily old ages thanks to technological breakthroughs, as long as we can all make the economics work out. Is that you are living under the influence of the planet Uranus right now as a long-term thing. And the planet Uranus is about high energy. There is an electric energy to Uranus. There is a rebellious energy to Uranus. It is a naughty planet. It likes to upend things. Its proper namesake should be Prometheus. Prometheus is the person who stole fire from the gods and brought it back to Earth, went up to Mount Olympus, and stole the fire of the gods. Now, what is the fire of the gods? It would seem the fire of the gods is a form of intelligence. It is a form of consciousness. It is, you might say, it is the fruit of the knowledge of good and evil, only expressed as the Greeks as the passion of the mind, as the fire that informs us and that illuminates us from the inside. And in addition, it is capable of making radical changes. The thing that Uranus wants to be doing is reinventing itself all the time. And though this may be a restless time, it is a profoundly meaningful time, an exciting time, a challenging time, especially for people who you are in relationship with, because they are in many ways getting to meet a new person every day. They're having an encounter that they've never had before with someone. And it may be tempting to want to hold yourself steady and to be stable and to kind of put on a front of not changing. But as you've seen by now, at least a few times, that's impossible to maintain, because there is just so much energy pouring through your mind, your body, your ideas, the community that you live in, and basically everything that you touch. And so that is something to remember, that this is not the kind of laid-back, easygoing, whatever happens time, but rather it is like the moment of immediately preceding an invention. As you may know, I'm a great fan of the Wright brothers, the fellows who invented the airplane, who actually got humans to go off the ground and dependably fly, and they figured out those dynamics. And the years immediately preceding the first flight were very exciting. They were very trying. They really had to work. There were setbacks, and there was also the need to be constantly inventive and doing things better and better. Make that thing lighter. Make that thing stronger. How do we get the engine to be dependable enough to sustain something in flight? And as the invention approach, the events concentrated as they got closer, and then there was the moment of breakthrough, and now you are arriving at the moment of breakthrough. So there's been a long run, now more than 5 years, of Uranus in Aries, and now Uranus is approaching a conjunction to Eris, which has likely been in Aries since long before your birth. Eris arrives in Aries in the 1920s, and so you have to be older than that to have Eris in Pisces. So basically, in a little while, every person alive on Earth, with the exception of the 115-year-old people who seem to populate Japan, is born with Eris in Aries. And that is all of us. And now what's happening is Uranus, a slow mover but not as slow moving as Eris, is making a conjunction to Eris. And so there is a kind of a revolution happening, Uranus is revolutionary. Eris is revolutionary. We put the two of them together, and there is this profound breakthrough moment. And while this is happening, at the same time that this is happening, this first of three conjunctions, which is exact on the 9th of June, 2016, at 4 a.m. exactly, 4 a.m. Greenwich Mean Time, is the first of three meetings of Uranus and Eris, the first meetings of these planets since 1927, 1928, when it happened the last time. While this is happening, particularly the first conjunction on June 9th, Mars, the planet that rules your sign and rules this conjunction because it is the planet connected to Aries where the conjunction is taking place, Mars will be retrograde. And it is implying, this combination of factors is implying that the revolution is from within. Here's why I'm saying that. First of all, we have the Uranus-Eris conjunction happening in Aries. But the meeting is guided by, in a sense, described by the motion of Mars during the first event. And the motion of Mars during the first event is retrograde. And so the motion of Mars is saying before any personal renaissance, before any revolution, there is or must be introspection. And where we see this introspection happening is in, for me, what is one of the most fascinating zones of the zodiac, which is where the ninth house of spirituality and belief meets the eighth house of sex, death, money, and power. So we have the ninth house, which is often given these kind of esoteric references. You know, it's about cosmology, it's about belief systems, it's about religion, it's about spirituality. There can be information about your concept of your higher self in the ninth house, especially with Sagittarius on that as you have it in your solar chart. And right now Mars is there, and it is, in a sense, getting ready to ask some profound questions about why you believe what you believe. Now, while Mars is getting ready to station retrograde in Sagittarius, in your ninth house, there is additional information in that house coming from Saturn. Saturn entered Sagittarius, let's see if I can get this right. In late 2014, late 2014, and then it spent 2015 going back and forth between Sagittarius and Scorpio, where it was previously, and then it placed itself back in Sag in late 15, where it will be till late 2017. So this is a unusually long-term span of a planet in a Saturn in a sign. And what Saturn in Sagittarius is doing is aiding and abetting this concept of really understanding what you believe and why you believe. Now, this might be going on two different ways. One way could be a kind of a hunkering down of your beliefs, kind of grabbing onto the most dependable old-style values that you have, a kind of a regressive, reactionary clinging to your most conservative beliefs and values. There is another possibility, which I would consider a better possibility, which is that Saturn, in any place where it goes, clears the ground. It clears open space. It is kind of a how to describe this? Well, one of the misunderstandings about Saturn in astrology is that it's about all things that are stuck. For example, the first version of Saturn in Sagittarius I gave you, that it's about something regressive and clinging to old beliefs. That, you might say, is the old style conception of what Saturn is. Modern astrologers have seen Saturn work in different ways, and I've personally seen Saturn work in different ways. And as far as I'm concerned, Saturn is one of the most dependable agents of change, and one of the ways it facilitates that change is by getting things that don't need to be there out of the way. So this process could be working for you both ways. You might be wanting to move things out of the way. You might be intending to do so. You might be asking questions. And at the same time, you know you can hold steady with a certain dimension of the beliefs you already have that you came into the conversation with. There's no need to make radical changes right away, but just to understand that there is a process of radical change and transformation going on. And what astrology is telling us here with this reading of Sagittarius for you, Aries, is saying is that a lot of what's changing involves your beliefs. It involves, or we could say that the updating of your belief systems is the thing that is the necessary precursor to the Renaissance. Beliefs really can have a way of kind of running the show. And as the Course in Miracles said, as I rediscovered from the Course in Miracles text, what you do is a testament to what you believe. So one of the tests the Course in Miracles presents in its often highly pragmatic way is if you want to know what you believe, ask yourself what you do, observe your life, and look at the actual choices that you make. Those will describe your beliefs. And so when it comes time to question your beliefs and to revise and redevelop your beliefs, the thing to do is ask yourself about your actions, right? Are you actually acting on what you know? Or how are you kind of guiding yourself in this transformation process into letting action be the fruit of knowledge and action be the thing that demonstrates the new frontier of what you're discovering about your beliefs? Now, the beauty of this setup on one level is that there is not an immediate rush, but there is an immediate summoning to ask some real questions, to look into the ways in which the values you were given, most likely as a child that you were born into, have been influenced by the belief systems of others, the single most important one of those being the belief system called religion of the family that you were born into. And it's necessary to look for this in the obvious ways and the not obvious ways. Any family that professed to be atheist is still influenced by the dominant cultural paradigms of religion. Religion is merely a media product, basically, whether it's delivered in a mega church or a Catholic church or on a late night Christian radio program coming over AM radio while you're driving down I-5 in the California mountains, and the environment is the thing to check here, the medium of transmission that you're in. And so the first thing to do is to become aware of the environment that you were in and the environment that you are in now and how this relates to and informs the mental environment, which you might think of as the conducting medium of the decisions that you actually make. And so since decisions are the testimony of belief, this is where belief and decisions need to become like put under a big magnifying glass, and you start to look carefully at this nexus of belief and of action. And so there's not an immediate necessary to take action, that being because Mars is retrograde, except for the action of taking this whole trip internally and really figuring out what the environment did to you, and also noticing what you feel safe doing in your environment. There are certain environments that facilitate certain decisions. If you live alone, you're freer to have a certain kind of a social life. If you live with a partner, you're less free to have a certain kind of a social life, merely dependent upon your environment, having less to do with your ethics or your values about monogamy or polyamory or whatever. It might not be appropriate to go out to dinner with someone of the opposite sex if you're straight. you live with someone. But if you live alone, you can go out with a friend. I'm not saying those are the actual rules you live by, but often the environment is what seems to dictate our ability to make decisions. And I'm suggesting that you question the environment that you're in, both your own internal environment as well as the environment that is established in your relationships. And then to take a further step and do this challenging inner work of asking yourself where these values and these beliefs came from. We live in a society that is absolutely soaked in disguised religious values. Just so that you're au dotus of that fact. Now, one of those religious values, as I have been perhaps overemphasizing lately, involves the way in which religion has capitalized on and basically declared itself as having a monopoly on two things, death and sex. And it turns out that Mars, the planet that's retrograde, the planet that rules your sign, is on a little journey through Sagittarius, the realm of belief, the realm of isms, the realm of your concept of who you quote unquote really are. And it's retrograde, and it is going to go through this house of isms and religion and beliefs into something much more visceral, more emotional, more biological, and more hormonal, more, in a sense, real and less theoretical, right? There's really nothing theoretical about Scorpio. Scorpio is a direct experience of existence. Sagittarius, on the other hand, can represent anything from an idea, a thought, an observation, an institution, a concept, a teaching of some sort, a great book, a library containing all those great books. It has a kind of few steps removed from what is actually viscerally real to you. And now Mars, your ruling planet, is going to basically be spawning upstream in retrograde motion and move from Sagittarius, this kind of house of sort of abstract ideas, into this directly, immediately relevant zone of your horoscope. Scorpio, which for you happens to be the eighth house, and the eighth house is about the following. It's the most crowded house, by the way, as my old girlfriend Maria said when I was teaching her astrology. We took a while and we learned the eighth house. So it turns out the eighth house is that of sex, death, money, power, jealousy, secrets, and surrender. And you might think, wow, that's a lot of subjects. And as Maria said, that's a very crowded house. It is. And all of those topics, sex, death, money, power, jealousy, secrets, control, and surrender, have a few important things in common, the most vivid of which are sex and death. And the way that expands into finances is that sex is the thing that's transacted in marriage. Basically, marriage is kind of a sex license, and that it comes with a dowry. So in the old days, we don't really do dowries so much anymore. I'm sure wealthy families do something like it. You know, if you marry into the family, you get some money, or you have access to your spouse's money. But the way that it translates into money in the modern world is shared finances and shared sexual resources. Then there's death. Death is this biological fact, absolutely intimately associated with sex, because we have mortality because we have sexual reproduction. This is these are two biologically joined realities that are what we live with basically from minute to minute. And so you might say that since we could be immortal without sexual reproduction, that either the reward for death is sex, or the price we pay for sex is death, but in any event, they're connected, and the place they're connected is Scorpio and the eighth house, and that is where your Mars is heading, into this realm of things that nobody really likes to talk about that much. unless you're me, and you talk about them a lot. And there are those few people who are like, wow, this is really fascinating. I've got to find out more about this. Well, you're on your way to finding out more about it. And here's the main theory that I'm working with to do this. And this partly comes from a lot of places. We're familiar with the cover-up of sex by religion, this kind of co-opting of the whole subject of sex, first of all, by declaring it a moral issue rather than a biological issue, right? Have you ever wondered how it is exactly that this thing that is this everyday reality somehow became this vast, all-encompassing moral drama? I mean, what else is that? Can you imagine sneezing becoming a vast, all-encompassing moral drama? Eating lunch? Well, somehow sex has become this vast, all-encompassing moral drama. And there is one way, and only one way, that that happened. And that is because religion made it a moral drama for the purposes of furthering the cause of religion. This never did anyone any favors. And the fact of the sexual abuse by religious leaders belies the underlying truth. So you didn't have to fall for any of that. You now are in this process or being invited to take part in this process by Mars retrograde, about to be retrograde in Sagittarius, to be about observing what you believe, observing the kind of philosophical concepts that you have, and then going underneath the wrapper of those concepts and into the underlying reality of how you actually feel, what you actually want, what you are in fact afraid of, the actual ways that you want to bond with others, the ways that you do bond with others, and this level of what you might think of as authentic, profound exchange that you have. And so the question then becomes, first of all, how do you really feel about these subjects, for example, sex and death, that no one wants to talk about, especially at the kitchen table? Underneath all the things that religion told you about sex and death, and that did such an impressively good job at completely monopolizing, which is basically what religion has done. It has monopolized the discussion of sex and death. Well, how do you really feel about these things? What's underneath that? What is it that really drives you? What does the fear of death make you do? What is the fear of intimacy? What does the desire for intimacy lead you to do? What is your conscious relationship with your own mortality? This is a question being asked, perhaps no more succinctly stated than Mars retrograde in Scorpio and the eighth house. And so basically the scenario that we're looking at is first an examination of your belief systems, and then as Mars retrogrades back, an inquiry into what you actually feel and what actually motivates you. If you're working this process, I would say you would likely to be having daily discoveries, and that at least one of those discoveries every day would be a little bit shocking. It might surprise you. You might be glad you found it out. You might remember something that happened that influenced you to act or be or think of yourself a certain way. And I would propose that if you are engaged in this in an active and participatory and curious way, that you will have a feeling of setting some more of yourself free every day, of liberating a bit more of yourself every day. And by being who you are, feel better. By throwing off bullshit concepts and saying, well, that's this whole trip that was laid on me. This is just this, for example, you live through a whole religious thing as a child, for example, perhaps as hypothetical, and then you picked up on more contemporary forms of spirituality, and you figure out that basically they're just saying the same thing in different ways, really, that spirituality tends to say the same things that religion is saying in ways that are more politically correct, but ultimately it's saying the same thing. Thou must be whatever. Thou must not feel whatever. This is the good part of your emotional sphere, and this is the bad part of your emotional sphere. And what this retrograde of Mars is doing is basically weaving together your idea of who you are with the reality of who you are, and helping you release the need to have kind of Chinese walls and partitions and all this, limiting your ability to express yourself, limiting your ability to feel, to be, and to live with full vitality and full participation in your life, and to relate to people with full participation in your life. Ah, now you get the chance to claim these things back, to make discoveries and to live and act on and make choices and have faith that you're doing the right thing for yourself because it is reflective of what you actually feel and what you actually want. And tying this back into the conjunction of Uranus and Eris in your sign, here's what I think this is saying. My impression is that the message of this combined astrology is that the revolution of Uranus conjunct Eris is a real thing. It is happening. It is shaping you. It is inspiring you. You're getting visions for what you want to do. You're feeling your inner ground of being rumble. But the only way to set that energy free, to allow those intentions, discoveries, and this kind of flowering that you're going through to fully manifest, requires you to do this inner journey of penetrating through the kind of cloud cover of your beliefs and enter the actual realm of your feelings. And with Mars and Scorpio in the eighth house, the realm of your feelings also involves understanding the commitments that you now have, the contracts that you now have, and identifying all of the facets of those contracts and understanding where the agreements, you might think in the words of Carolyn May, sacred contracts or ordinary contracts, how they shape your ability to make choices. And one of the things that Mars retrograde is saying, particularly in Scorpio, in the eighth house, is saying you really need to be in the agreements that serve you and to some extent serve people around you, but really this is about serving your needs first and to not be in the agreements that prevent you from being who you are or that become excuses to prevent you from being who you are, that perhaps limit your movement, limit your choices. And so at the heart of the matter is what you've agreed to and now what you want to agree to. There you go. That's part one. I'm going to do one more section of audio where I talk about the relationship of fire and water. And then I'll do the tarot section and astrology afterthoughts as video. So we'll see how that works. First time at the rodeo with a video birthday reading. Aries is the appropriate sign to make new advances. So that's what I'm doing. Thanks for being an experimental subject on there and friendly, kind of an experiment. And I will catch you in the next section.
Mm-hmm.